Welcome to Tackling the Opioid Epidemic with a Prescription Playbook, where we have conversations about educating adults and community members to prevent overdoses and help to end the opioid crisis. My name is Erica, and I'm here with my lovely co-host Marissa today. We are both prevention specialists working on the Prescription Playbook, and we are very excited to welcome two of our guests today. So I'm going to have both of you go ahead and introduce yourselves now.
Well, hello everybody. My name is Judith Winfrey. I am known as Beauty, and I've been with the task force for a year now. But before that, I was a peer support specialist at another agency. And before that, I did senior care. So I worked with seniors that has opioid issues. I also went to school to become a CNA. So I have a lot of different things. I am fluent in first mental health first aid. I actually train on ACEs, and that's about all for me.
Beautiful. Thank you.
My name is Gail Richardson. I'm from the West Side, 69 years. I've lived in by myself. I started with the task force when the task force started in 19. I have lived experience. Before I worked there, I've been in a federal prison. So I got quite a few things in my background. I have a little long story, but I'm not going to tell my story. I just want to tell you a little bit about myself. And I'm from the West Side. And I give everything I got to give it back to the community.
That's beautiful, Gail. Thank you for
Thank you.
sharing. And thank you both for introducing yourselves and the interesting background that makes you both so great at what you do with this task force. So I'm wondering if you both could just tell us a little bit more about the West Side Opioid Task Force and then what, kind of motivated the creation of the task force, if you know any of that kind of history.
Okay, I can give you a little bit on that history. The task force started in 19 by State Representative LaShawn Ford. LaShawn Ford saw the need on the West Side to bring something to bring down these overdoses. So he come with this idea to the science, which we're under Prevention Partnership, the West Side Task Force. And that's what motivated us to create the creation of the task force. And they decided, let's get people from the community that actually live in the community, have lived that life, and we actually taught them things they didn't know. So that was the motivation of the creation of the task force through the shop.
I did not know that history, actually. So thank you so much for sharing.
We started off with I was the fourth person to start. It was two guys, one lady, and I was the fourth lady. And we used to catch the bus to do what we do. We used to
Wow.
walk the streets and catch the buses to meet the people where they are.
I love that, really, just like boots on the ground work of meeting people where they are. And I would love if either of you could share just more about the benefit of having people who are in the exact community being the ones doing this work in the community.
You want me to answer that as well?
Yes.
Okay. You say the benefits of a person, the benefits of living in the community. Believe it or not, you know a lot of people in the community, and you actually hung out with the people in the community. You actually have what is called footprints on these streets because this once was you up and down on these streets doing what they do. So we go out. And we talk, we also meet people we've never met before, but they want to know how is it that you did it? And we let them know what resources are available to them now that was not available to us back at that time. And our goal is to save lives. That's our main goal, is to save lives. And the group work, that's what our group works toward, you know. They're out there 6 days a week. Sometimes me and Beauty with the training in the senior buildings work on Sundays. We go wherever God sent us. I say I'm just a servant doing the work. And you know, I know I have a promise and I have a purpose, and I'm here to live it. So that's what our goal is, to save lives.
I love that, and I'm so thankful, and it's so inspiring to hear you say that you know that you have a purpose and that this is what you're meant to do and to help give back to the community. So I really love that. It's really making me like smile from ear to ear. Beauty, do you have anything that you would want to add? You know, times be tough. Times be tough right now. So hearing stuff like that is what really keeps the motivation going.
So, you know, when I was working at the other company that was mental health and substance abuse, that is when I was introduced to Miss Gail Richardson. And Gail, like, Beauty, we going over here on such and such a block. I think it'd be good for you to come with your company material so that we could let them know the resources that y'all get. And I said, Gail, that's a good way for me not to have to be in the office. Where are we going? And I literally would go meet up with her wherever they was so that I can get the information out into the community about what services we offered. And you know, me and Gail just took that as a way to, you know, just get outside. But it also gave us a way to educate the people on the streets where we were. You know, like Gail said, a lot of the times we go back to areas that we used to go buy drugs from. We're back in the areas where we used to live at, you know, the places where we raise our children. And so it's home to us. We don't do what we always did, but we're more efficient and more better because we had somebody that helped us out. And so now we're back to give it back. That's all.
What the task force do is we set up where they sell drugs at. We set up actually where, you know, on the west side, there's still a lot of open markets. So that's our target places. That's go where they are. And this is where we go and we let the people who's out there fracturing crime know that we're not here to move in on you. We are here to save lives. So they received us very well. We're on one side of the street, they're on the other side of the street. And we meet the clients as they come and go. And we let them know what all the different resources that are available to them now.
That's really, like, really, it can't be overstated how important it is that you all have, you know, you are a part of this community. You already have so much stake in this community and history and just the rapport that you all have by, you know, living within these communities is so important as a part of the work that you all do. And Gail, you did say, you know, that the whole point of the task force is to save lives. And so I would love to hear, so you've kind of already told me the goal of the task force, but I would love to hear more about, you know, the resources that the task force offers to people in the community. And then, yeah, any of the other kind of work that you guys are doing to help, you know, support this initiative of harm reduction and saving lives.
Okay, the task force we go into all the senior buildings in the city of Chicago because the senior buildings are experiencing a lot of overdoses. We want to bring awareness to the seniors because most of the seniors start off with prescription drugs that the doctor gave them. And then once they can't get them anymore, they go to the street drugs. We also let the seniors know about harm reduction. You can't stop grown folks from doing anything. You
No.
just want to teach them how to do it safely. And we have a team. Well, me and Beauty, we have to go statewide now, training and promoting. And we have a team that there's actually how many teams? Four or five teams, Beauty.
It's three teams.
No, you got to count us and the courageous conversation men.
So it's
We have a team of guys that talk to have a conversation with 400 courageous black men, people that are still using and people in recovery. They have conversations with these people and they have lunch with them. They let them know you can talk freely, you know, because they're sitting among peers. We also have a team that with the people that come out, we have family guidance. We have them come out with a mobile truck. We offer methadone. They offer methadone on the spot. They will see a doctor, and the doctor will medicate them that day, and they get a bus card to come back the next day to come down to the clinic. We also have another organization with us, Mondale, who offers Suboxone and Vivitrol, which is the shot. So we bring these resources to the community. We let them know how they can get a free ID, how you can get a free ID, how you can get a birth certificate. We have all these different people we collaborate with that we can actually call and they can go directly to them. We take people to Pacific Gardens if they are homeless and they don't want us to put them in the computer. At the same time, we're set up with HMIS, where we have a team that does that as well. And these are some of the resources. We even tell them about the places that have the jobs. We have collaboration with people that have jobs. If you're interested in a job, we'll send you. And if a person comes up to us and say, people on the street are going to say detox. They're not going to say management, you know, they're not going to say that. If they want to go to the detox, we put them in our car and we take them to, we have collaborations with a lot of hospitals. We take them straight to the hospital and wait till they're checked in before we leave. These are some of the things we do. We offer clean harm reduction kits as well.
What does the harm reduction kits look like, Gail?
Why don't you tell them, Beauty? Okay, the harm reduction kit consists of clean straws, clean needles, clean pipes. We want people to be safe. We're not endorsing for them to use. We just want them to be safe. That's
you
it.
Know, and like you said, they're not going to stop using. So if they're going to use, you might as well give them another way to stay safe and not transmit different diseases or catch diseases that you can't cure. So, and I'm gonna just let y'all know, I was that person that used to say, why are you enabling them? I just saw it as you giving them new things to do and a new way to do it. I never thought of it from the harm reduction side of how many people now, because they're getting fresh needles, is not getting AIDS. How many people now that is smoking is not getting the herpes around the lips? I'm just, you know, you got your own stuff. You don't no longer have to share. And so when I got educated on that, that's when I was like, aha, I'm saying, you know, stop being an enabler. You know, you will never hear that again, because everything is done for a reason. And although a lot of people do not understand the reason, once you educate them on it, like the task force had to educate me, once I got that education, it was like the light bulb went on, you know. And that's the part that I actually enjoy, is I don't know everything and I never will know everything, because it's too much in this world to know. But what I do know, I love to share so that somebody else can have that moment. Because it is so inspiring to see somebody that was negative like me and now all of a sudden saying, but look, if you go over here, check this address, act for this person. You know, people on the street would be there and be like, hey, have you seen the West Side Task Force people yet? Hey, go to them. Ask them about this. Ask them about that. If you go over to their office, Rich will help you find a job. I'm like, Rich, don't be having them people come up in here. I ain't opening no door for nobody. But, you know, I started smiling about it, because that means something is being done right for them to come knocking on your door at 9 o'clock in the morning. Only people up that early is people in the birds. And I'm like, these people knocking on this door, I ain't even turned on the lights yet. But they come looking. And I say, oh my God, this is so amazing. I say, I love this place. It is so amazing working here. Yep. So I ain't gonna ask you more questions, y'all.
No, thank you. Thank you so much for just your response and being very like open and candid when answering these questions. One of the reasons I like immediately wanted the West Side Opioid Task Force here on this podcast, because of the work that you guys do, and you really see people first and, you know, all human beings, regardless if, you know, they are sober or in recovery or whatever that might look like. Everybody deserves care and empathy and access to, basic hygiene and, access to jobs. And like you said, if people are at a place in their life where they're, not ready to explore recovery, they still know that you all are safe and reliable people to go to. And I can't stress just like how much that is appreciated, and the work that you do is so incredible and so needed. And especially your dedication to really those warm handoffs. I think too often we see a lot of, resources that float around or phone numbers, or we tell people, oh yeah, just check out this hospital. But it's the fact that you drive with people, you sit with them until, they really are able to be assisted through the rest of their recovery is something that's really noble and awesome. And thank you so much. We kept saying the word a few different times, harm reduction. I think most people who listen to this podcast will understand what harm reduction is. But I'm curious, just from both of your perspectives, what does harm reduction really mean to you and to the work that, the West Side Task Force does?
What it means to me is I meeting them where they are, wanting them to be safe. That's what it means to me. Like Beauty said in the beginning, I couldn't come, especially with me being in recovery, and I'm looking at this. You want me to cut up some straws for real? But
Girl, boy, really? Do you know how many of them I used?
it was until I actually got it when I went to the OPS site in New York. I really got it in, and I learned to understand it. And that's why I know the importance of harm reduction is so important. So important. And see, a lot of people will say, like we thought at first, you might as well give them $5 or $10 and put them in a bag. You're not endorsing what they're doing at all. You just want them to be safe.
And see, that was the part that took me the longest to understand. Because I always saw it as an enabling factor. So now, when I look at the word harm reduction, I look at what I needed when I was out there. I needed somebody to say, hey, you don't have to share that with them. Here's your own. Because this will reduce this and this and this. I thank God. I'm gonna tell y'all now that I never had to worry about those things because I always used with my husband, but he didn't always just use with me. So I'm very grateful that I came out with just little nicks and bruises and nothing major, because it's a lot of us that we have used with that's not here today. A lot of them, they did not make it through that. And so I can say I made it. I survived that. And so if I could survive that, I want to be that person that I wanted when I was out there. I want to be that person that I needed when I was out there. And so that is my biggest way of saying harm reduction, because I can teach you how to stay safe. Don't mean you're gonna do it, but I can teach you. They teach you reading, writing, and arithmetic. How many of us really count today? I'm just saying. But you know it. So it's all about knowing, and you can always go back and revisit, but the harm reduction to me is just like Gail said, meet them where they are. Be the person that you needed somebody to be for you. That's the best way to prevent the harm. Because once you be that, then they say, wow, I want what she got. And so you have now touched somebody's life that you didn't even know 20 minutes ago, just from being kind and being who you are. And sometimes that gets lost in recovery. Because sometimes we, and I'm gonna say we, because I'm one of those we's, we tend to get so many years under our belt and forget whence we came from. Oh no. Yes, it can. I have a saying with my clients, you know what you're doing right this second. You don't know what's gonna happen in 10 minutes from now. So don't ever say I'm clean, I'm this, I'm that. No, you have just this moment. We can plan something for the future, but only God knows what our future is gonna look like. So I don't tend to plan for something for 5 and 10 days from now. unless it's for my paycheck, and then I make sure I get that correct, y'all. That's the only thing I'm planning. Anything else, I don't plan, because you never know which way you're going to go. You know, me and Gail will get a call at 6 o'clock in the evening talking about something they need. And Gail be like, hey, beauty, can you handle it? I got it, Gail. You know, because you never know. And I'm like, it does tug at you, but you're trying to be that person that you needed. And that's the main thing for me.
You know what, guys? When I first started hearing about harm reduction, I thought about a seatbelt. What, putting on, because I never was one that liked to put on seatbelts. But then I realized that's harm reduction too. I'm reducing the harm of having on your seatbelt if something happens. I had to look at it. I looked at it on all different ways. Okay. So, all right, that's harm reduction too. I want to stay safe while I'm in the car. I'm reducing some, you know, my chances of some harm coming to me. You know, I thought about that a lot. That's what really helped me in what harm reduction, because harm reduction comes in all different forms.
Yeah, so true. Harm reduction is things like wearing a seatbelt, wearing a helmet, using condoms.
Yes.
All things that we learn at young ages in school, and harm reduction in this sense works in the exact same way. I think one of my favorite things about getting to do this work is getting to learn about harm reduction. And although we focus on prevention, I really appreciate the way that over the last, I would say like 2 years, we've really seen the integration of prevention and harm reduction education. Excuse me. Even when I'm in the high schools giving a presentation, we talk about things like naloxone and we talk about fentanyl test strips, because we also know that when we're talking to these people, maybe the youth that we're talking to are not the ones who need these resources, but maybe they know someone else who does.
Right.
And so that education all around is just so important to really work to end the opioid epidemic and to help keep meeting people where they're at until they can get access to whatever resource they may need. And speaking of resources, Gail, I would love to hear you talk about going to the On Point Center in New York. I had the absolute joy of hearing Sam Rivera talk about the opening of it when I was at a conference a few years ago, and his session and the mission of the On Point place in New York is just incredible. So I would love if you could just like share about that really quickly.
Okay. Me going to the overdose prevention site, as we was coming in, I noticed a few houses down, some guys was working. So when I look at it like this, when you've been in the street and you've lived that life, you know what's going on. So I walked over to the guys. I said, hey, what's going on? What's happening? Y'all working? You know, I'm asking, you know, because I'm down to earth. He said, we good, but the OPS site right there. I said, oh, okay. I never asked them what they were selling. I just say, well, you working? And the young man gave me the answer. So we went in. The place, what I like about it, everything is under one roof. Everything. It's under one roof. And they don't have federal funded money or state money. The way they're operating this place is not 24 hours yet. But I believe it's going to be 24 hours. It's just amazing. The lady, Kayla, she came from Canada. And when you walk in, it's just a big old room where there's couches, people. They have formed relationships with people. And that's what we do on the streets. You want to have a relationship with these people, because these people are going to trust you and they're going to open up to you. And I noticed how some was sitting there watching TV. They provide lunch. And over on the other side is where the doctor is, where the social worker is, where, I mean, they can wash their clothes. They can take a shower. I'm looking at all this under one umbrella. This is wonderful. Upstairs, they got acupuncture. They got different classes. This is giving people that's still using, letting them see all these things that's still available, that's available to them there. And if someone is there, while we was there, they was taking a person to the rehab. One guy wanted to go to the rehab. They got a van there where they transport them. And Their EMS calls are down there. But when I walked into the room where they actually use it, I was, wow. I was like, my mouth was wide open. The way it was set up and how in the middle of the room, people peer support people, and only one person might be a medical person, is running this. And they're watching these people. Their job is to watch them as they use. And while we was there, an overdose occurred. And I am such a, I do this when I reverse an overdose, I cry. It's just, that's because I see me. That once was me. And I watch how Kalem did that. It was so amazing how she actually never called EMS, never used Narcan. What she did to bring that man down, to calm that man down, and to bring him out of overdose, I thought it was amazing. I say, oh, now I understand why we need this in Chicago. I can't hear you. Okay.
That must have been truly just a just like such a like a an incredible experience to gain that perspective of what true harm reduction looks like. And when you really see people who are using substances like as people first, and like you said, just to know that they treat these people like human beings and they offer them services that should be offered to anybody else who is in need of any kind of services or support. And so that was, I had never heard that story before. So thank you so much for sharing, Gail. But I would love to hear a little bit more, Gail. You had actually just talked about being a person with some lived experience. So I would love to learn or just hear from you guys a little bit more about how having peer support specialists or people who have lived experience, having them as part of the task force, how does that shape the work you do or, impact the resources that you offer?
Go ahead, Beauty.
So having the peer support is probably the best thing that has ever happened, because for me, I always tell them my story of how I did not want to bring in the 2000s with the old habits. New January 1st, everybody make all these plans of what they're gonna do in the new year and how it's gonna go. And December, I said, I don't want to go into the new year tooting this dope no more. I'm tired. I'm looking old. I wasn't even 30 yet. I looked old. And I sat up there and I said, okay, I quit. December 31st at 11:59 p.m. was my last tooth of heroin, and I never went back. And everybody say, well, you'll be back. Yeah, only in dreams, baby, in your nightmares, because I ain't doing it no more. And I tell everybody, and that's the one thing I always say, never say what you won't do. But that's the one thing I could tell y'all. And never, I did not like the experience of not having it and needing it. That was the worst for me. Sunday mornings was like my slow day, my relaxed day, and I never had enough dope inside of me to sustain me for the whole day. So now I have to get up and go out and do my hustle so I can come back. That was too much work. That was really, really hard. And trying to raise my children at the same time made it even harder. So when I finally got through with the heroin, I went into an outpatient place in Maywood, over on Main Street, right off of 11th and Main, somewhere over in that way. And it was a lady in there, little short Mexican lady. Her name was Alvarez. I remember that because she told me, if I see you, we gonna have an issue. She said, I have been off of this for so many years, and I just want to give you what I had. I didn't know she was a peer support. I had no idea. All I knew is this woman was pouring into me what was given to her. And that is the one thing I could say that peer supports do, is we give you the perspective from us, from our side. And every recovery is different, but you take what you can from each person, and then that develops who you are. And that's why so many different peer supports, because like I worked with a lady that felt she needed to be passive with them, and I ain't no passive person. You know you messed up, cut that mess out. What you gonna do about it? How are you gonna fix it? Come on, let's work this out. Everybody like, you too hard. I said, well, the world ain't easy. And when you get through with recovery, staying clean is not gonna be easy. You got to be real with them. It's not sunshine and roses. Your life ain't gonna be all skipping down the block. That ain't gonna happen. You're gonna have real life events that happen. You're gonna have death. You're gonna have births. You're gonna have sickness. You're gonna have ailments. Ain't nobody staying young, so you're gonna get more gray hairs. Your teeth gonna fall out. You're gonna get wrinkles. I mean, it's just a fact of life. You need a peer support that's gonna be truthful with you. And if they can't, and the only way a peer support can be truthful is if they truthful to themselves.
Right. I wholeheartedly feel that it's so important to have people with lived experience, because when you're in them streets, sometimes people won't listen. You can connect with them better because you lived it. So you understand what they're going through. When some people don't quite understand it, they might be doing a job, but they just doing a job. They not feeling the job. They not feeling what that person is feeling at that very moment. And when they talk to you, believe it or not, you form a relationship with these people. They'll come out, is Miss Gill here? Is Miss Beauty here? No, I want to talk to them. You know, and you form such a bond with them because they know when you tell them something, your word is all you got. And we have to tell our story to people a lot. I mean, truly tell your story to a person. And when they see you walked in their shoes, you've been in their shoes before, they have a tendency to open up to you more. They figure they can trust you. You know the language. You know what it's all about. But a person that actually hasn't lived it, they can relate, but they can only relate so far. That's not to say they don't feel empathy, but they actually cannot relate, but so far.
I remember when I first went out with the task force before I joined the team, Gail say, "Nah, don't be scared to tell your story." I said, "I ain't telling nobody my damn story. You crazy." And then after about 3 months, because it take you a while to warm up. As y'all can see, I'm a talker. I don't mind talking. But I would not tell my story. I would not tell nobody what it was I went through, how I went through. And Gail say, "Okay, is you ready? Because we getting ready to go up here on Chicago Avenue in Christianity. And I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to have to tell your story to these people. Is you listening, Beauty?" I say, "I hear you." She said, "No, are you listening?" And I said, "Yes, ma'am, Miss Gail, I'm listening." And when I got up there, that was the very first time I had ever told anybody about the violence that I had to go through, about the struggles that I went through. And I tell everybody, I didn't feel comfortable telling people because, you know, it's a lot of people out there that's very judgmental of what you do and how you came through and whatever avenue you took. But Gail helped me get over that fear. See what you done did? See, look at what you done did. You know, but it helped so much. And then it got point where her team, "Oh, there go Beauty. We gonna have Beauty with us today. Okay, Gail, go on, Gail. We got Beauty." And then I just started feeling around and seeing how I can be of help. And that helped me out a whole lot, child. Let me just be honest. Because telling the story, first of all, reliving what you've been through
is healing.
It's healing, but the very first time, it is like so scary and intimidating. I'm like, do I want to tell somebody that my husband put my head through a brick wall? How do you say, Gail said, "You ain't going to tell your whole life story in one sitting, girl, shut up. You going to tell them how you got through those that puking. How did you get over the mess and how did you get through that?" That is the story they need to hear, not how you got to that point, but just help them right there. And that I tell everybody, it was Gail that pushed me. I ain't gonna tell no lies there. Gail, if you ever want somebody to push you into a direction you don't want to go, that's your girl. Because she gonna pull it out of you one way or another.
Let
And she
me tell
will.
I
Go
say
ahead.
go ahead. I have to tell y'all something that my grandmother taught me. She said to me years ago, people that's in your life, you're there to give them something and to receive something from them. Don't ever think you're just on the receiving end. It's something you're supposed to give them. And that's always stuck with me. What is it that I'm supposed to give them? What am I supposed to get from them? And sometimes you don't know that's what you know. And she also told me people are in your life for a reason, a season, and some people are for a lifetime. And whatever that reason is, you'll find out what it is. And if the season is over, you'll move on. But a lifetime, you'll be stuck with them. And she says, you know, she broke it down to me on a little more dip, you know. I had to sit there and ponder over that. Okay. I get it. I get it. But that's how I feel about when I work the street outreach. You guys, I just, when I go out there, my heart just be so open. I'm willing to listen to their story. I don't want them to just listen to mine. I want to hear something about you. This is where our connection takes place. You know, that's why I tell you guys, relationship, going out on them streets is something, like I remember I told you, Beauty, I had been out there all them years and I never noticed the bags on the ground. Now I've been doing this forever and I never noticed the bags on the ground. So I asked my coworker one day, where did these bags come from? He said, yeah, they're there every day. And that told me, okay, I'm so king on what I come out here to do, my purpose. I never noticed the bags. I truly never noticed them. I said, okay, God, I'm glad I saw them today, but it feels good when you can look at them and you don't, and you don't have no type of feeling, no type of feeling for them. You don't have a desire to use it. Now, that doesn't come easy. I'm not telling you guys it's gonna come easy. My personal belief that a person that doesn't have X amount of clean time should never do street outreach if they is still out there, because they
But you
still
know
have
what,
to make
Gail?
it through.
I have a guy that, you know, used to do recovery workshops with me in the churches. And he was clean like 32 years. And we stopped doing that ministry because, of course, I moved on to more things and I say better things because I reach more than just a little cubicle.
Okay.
But I found out that he fell off his square. And he wound up relapsing after 32 years of clean
It,
time.
that's true. That's so true. It
And
doesn't.
so it doesn't matter amount of time. It man, your mindset is the only thing that matters. Are you really true? Are
That's
you
it.
done, or are you just taking a hiatus? Man,
Well,
I was that person. I just took me a break every once in a while.
you
I'll go
know.
clean up and then come on right back to the people, places, and things.
But
And then
see,
I clean up people, places, and things.
I used to do like you take breaks, but once I got there, I never forgot that highway. I can't never forget that highway is still there. It is still there. What am I gonna do to so I don't get on that highway?
That
What
part.
do I have to keep on doing? That's why I tell people in a minute, I'm not ashamed to tell nobody. I read Bible scriptures. What it takes for me is for me. What it takes for you might not be the same thing. You might have to go to a meeting, but I can go to a meeting with Jesus Christ and cry my way through.
We had
So
that conversation this morning as you was walking in the door this morning. I was like, I had one lady that asked me to be her sponsor. I said, baby, I can't be your sponsor. I said, I can assist you, but I can't be your sponsor. I said, because I, in good conscience, you know, I don't want to lead nobody down the wrong path,
Right.
first of all. I say, secondly, what worked for me might not work for you. And see, I had one of those hard-nosed people that want my sponsor. She ain't play that. 90 meetings, 90 days. Tell me about each meeting, and I want you to do different ones. I don't want you to go to the same one. And the reason you don't go to the same one, because all meetings are not the same. I
So
want you to hit the AA. I want you to hit the NA. I want you to hit the OA. I say the OA. She say the overweight people. Girl, get your butt up in there. It's an A at the end. You like, but At the time, I only weighed 110 pounds. The hell I need to go to OA for? She said, you just new to this recovery, baby. You gonna trust me. You gonna need that OA. And I'm like, dang, what's she trying to say? You know? I ain't gonna tell y'all, but right now I need OA. I ain't no 110 no more. You know, but it was just the fact that she opened my eyes to more than just NA. It was more than just AA. It was a group of different type of people struggling and trying to become whole. And that was the message that she gave to me. And so when I gave that to this young lady, but why would I go to that if I'm an alcoholic? I said, are you really? I didn't know I could open you up and pour you into a cup. And she said, Miss Peter, what are you talking about? I said, last time I checked, alcohol comes in bottles. And she just stopped. And I say, so stop putting your disease where you are. You right. are. Say your name, girl. And so she said her name. I say your name like you mean it. I say, now say your name like you're talking to that man. And then she gave me a whole different thing. I say, you see how you feel now? She said, oh, yeah. I said, all right, then. That's what I want you to say from here on out. Don't ever diminish yourself like that. You are not you are a mother. You are my friend. And that is how we're going to do it. And so now I don't sponsor people, but I set you on your way. I tell you what happened for me, how I got there. But right. it's up to you to work them steps at the end of the day. I can't work them for you. And I'm not going to hold you accountable because at the end of the day, you know what you need to do. You know how you want to do it. I could say, hey, Gail, go to the right. But what Gail I want to be, Gail, uh-huh. go to the right. Make another right. Make another right. You're going to get to where you got to go, but it's a lot of turns you got to do. And it's a process. And a yes, lot of people, they get discouraged in the process.
See, that's one. See, like, I've always believed that true deliverance is a process. Nothing just happened. It wasn't an accident. It was an incident. Mm-hmm. Nothing just happens. And I never had a sponsor. But believe it or not, I had a sponsor, which was my sister-in-law, who didn't realize she was sponsoring me, but she sponsored me spiritually through the spiritual steps. Mm-hmm. When I got out of federal prison, they wanted me to do these 90 minutes, and I did everything they said to do, but she the one that kept me so grounded. I would go to the meetings, and some meetings where I go through, I'm saying, I don't want to hear about how to get high. I want to know how to stay clean. Don't tell me about what you did when you get high. Tell me what you're doing to stay clean. What are your tools? How are you building yourself up? Because once you get clean, you're still going to have problems. Don't ever think that it's not going to come. But you gather these tools and you know how to deal with it a little better. You don't have to run and get high. For escapism, you don't have to do that anymore. You learn to deal with it. And like I said, mine was on a spiritual level. She was actually sponsoring me. And you know what I thought about that? She was actually my sponsor. And I didn't realize she was my sponsor. And she never went to NA before. So it's just different roads to recovery. And that's why I tell people, some people get on methadone. That'll work for them. If that works for you, try it. Some people take the shot, Vivitrol. If that's what you need, that's what you do. And medical management places don't work the same for everybody. Right. Some people tell us, I can't go over there no more. They do such and such. Okay, so where do you want to go? We want to send you somewhere where you think that you can make it through this withdrawal. That's it, management withdrawal. Wherever you think you can make it through. And that's the biggest fear, the withdrawals. No one wants to feel those withdrawals.
You know what, Gail? When I was trying to come up off of heroin the last time, I did not have a plan. I didn't know how I was going to do it. And I was too scared to get on methadone because these people that I'm getting high with, it's still they drinking their methadone, but they still sitting here tooting dope with me. So right. I definitely don't want no methadone because clearly it ain't working. You know, I didn't know the process.
Right.
or really how methadone worked. I just seen these fools on methadone and they still tuned out. What? I want none of that stuff if I'm trying to get off.
Right.
And so one of the guys, he was like, yeah, I got these two bottles I'm trying to sell so I can pay my rent and this and that. And I was like, let me see. So you telling me you getting ready to sell your methadone so that you can pay your rent? I said, okay, come on. I bought the methadone, y'all. I ain't gonna tell no lie. I don't tell anybody to do this, but we being transparent. I bought them because I was sick and tired of blowing dope. And I knew I did not want to go into no clinic and do it every single
Okay.
day. So I bought these two little bottles, 100 milligrams. And so on January 1st of 2000, I woke up and I was feeling the aches, the pains, and sweating and all that. So I said, okay, let me just go get me a teaspoon. I go in
Right.
the kitchen to get me a teaspoon. And my husband back there chugging. I say, you done lost your mind? Man, we ain't going out like that. I say, you done had your dose for the day. Don't you touch it no more. So I got the little teaspoon. I took the teaspoon. That was January 1st. January 2nd, I took another teaspoon. January 3rd, I did not need anything. And I said, I don't know whether it was my mind that just told me I was done or whether I just didn't want the methadone. I had to get a man back a whole full bottle. But I was sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. And that just like I didn't know no other way. You know, and so I was like at my wit's end, what do I do now? And I said I'm grateful for methadone.
Yes, if
I
that's
mean,
the case.
I should have went to a doctor and got it prescribed, but it worked for me because I was able to just take the teaspoon. I wasn't trying to get high. I wasn't trying to nod. I wasn't trying to do nothing. I just did not want to be sick.
Right.
I was already sick. I was sick and tired of being sick.
Right.
So I was like, oh my God, how am I gonna do this? And so it helped me by doing that. And it's 2 days of methadone, a teaspoon, really? I had $300 a day habit. How is that possible? I said, see, and I look back at that, and I'm looking at all these people out and bought their houses, their mansions, their cars, and I'm like,
Yes.
can I get a refund on my money? You ain't got to give it all back. Just give me a portion of what I spent with y'all. Bless
But
your sister right now.
both of
but
you have shared, I think, really why like being a peer support specialist and having people with lived experience is so important in the work that you do, because like you both have just talked about, really what you are doing when you are working with people, out in the streets or you're sitting with them and taking them to the hospital is really a like a transfer of energy in a way. And I think it becomes so much more meaningful and so much more potent, so to speak, because they can see themselves in you and vice versa. You can see yourself in this client. And I think that breeds just so much compassion and so much empathy. And like even just the stories that you have told, even though there were, things that were not so great, there are ways to look back on what happened and laugh through those like experiences and well as well. And so I think that's why honestly peer support work is so important and so amazing. I would love if both of you could give me in just maybe a few sentences what you would like people to know about recovery in general, whether it's for somebody looking to go into recovery, maybe just for somebody in the community who isn't familiar. What message do you want people who might be listening to this podcast to hear?
Recovery works.
Yes, that's summing it up very well. Recovery works. It really does. It's all about you recovering, going, coming back to yourself. Like I said, it's not easy. But my grandmother told me if anything come easy, is it really worth having? Is it really worth having? You have to work for it. You have to work at it. You have to, and if your heart is truly in it, ain't no devil in hell gonna stop you from staying on that road. You're gonna keep on. Even if you fall off, I tell people, get back up again. Try it again. Don't beat yourself up. Don't beat yourself up. if your cup, you like the way you felt in the morning, you know, you can actually get up and feel good about you. Look in yourself. Look at the mirror sometimes. You got to encourage yourself. Speak to yourself. Say, I am today more than a conqueror. Today, I can do all things through Christ. And you tell them you're walking into your purpose. You have to speak to yourself sometimes. Encourage yourself. I tell people all the time.
That's beautiful. Thank you so, so much, Beauty and Gail. This has honestly
You're
been
welcome.
me and Erica's favorite podcast we've probably ever recorded. You guys have been so knowledgeable and just like so compassionate and personable. So again, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Come and bring your podcast over to the International Overdose Awareness Day.
Yes.
It's happening August 28th over on Lake in Pulaski. And there you can get to meet all of our community partners. You can see what it is that the task force brings to the community.
Yeah, awesome. I would definitely. We've already been talking about ways that we can be more supportive of our community partners for Recovery Month. So I'm very, very excited to get to work with both of you. And I hope we can do this again. And I would love to meet
you. You know, me and Gail, we got plenty of stories in there.
Oh, I know. I would love to hear all of them. All right. Well, thank you both so, so much. We truly appreciate your time, your vulnerability, and all of the incredible work that you do to support each other and your community in terms of the battle against the opioid epidemic and just helping communities and individuals to help be versions of themselves that they're proud of and that they like to be in the morning. Both of your stories are just so inspiring and like you truly both have just made my week yesterday and today getting to do this. It has really, really, really made my week and just warmed my heart. So I really thank both of you so much for everything.
And thank you for having us.